What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
To listen without ads, head over to patreon.com/rightandwrong.
Ooh, a spicy question. I love it.
Because the writing is sort of everything, right? Like, you kind of can fix plot holes, but if the writing is
so some readers love that, and some readers are like, but I wanted more of this. So it's kind of a gamble.
Hello, and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. On today's episode, I am joined by a board-certified eye doctor who has combined her expertise with a love of literature to write engaging and educational children's books to raise awareness about vision disorders. It's Yasmin El-Ruby. Hello.
Hi, Jamie. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm so excited to be here.
Thanks for coming on, all the way from Abu Dhabi.
Yes, yes. I work in Abu Dhabi at Cleveland Clinic, and I've been living here for the last 18 years. So happy to be on the show.
Let's talk about the books, the children's series, the Misty Mole books, of which there are currently three. Tell us a little bit about it.
So, you know, I've been working as an eye doctor for almost 20 years, and I also have a background in public health, and I've always been passionate about raising awareness about common vision disorders of the eye, especially those that are treated early on and that can prevent vision impairment or even blindness. And, you know, typically we see a lot of public health campaigns about mental health, chronic diseases, cardiovascular health, but really not that many about eye health. And so my goal through these books is to raise awareness about the importance of early vision screenings and very common vision disorders. And I'm hoping that message rings loud and clear when you read the books.
That's obviously what inspired the kind of crux and the message within these books. Yes. What was it that made you want to do like children's books with a cute little mole and animals?
So I do see a lot of kids in my clinic, and there was one particular patient. So basically, it's my patients that have inspired this book series. But there was one particular boy that came in, a six-year-old boy, who came in for a regular eye exam, and he was diagnosed with having developmental disabilities, and he was really difficult to examine, couldn't sit still, was non-compliant, and surprisingly, it was actually his first eye test, not flagged at school by the nurse or any type of eye screening. And it was actually a huge shock to find out that he had a large uncorrected refractive error that was easily treated with a pair of glasses. So when he came back to see me a few months later, he was a completely different child. He was focused, more verbal. And his mom was really amazed at how the glasses had changed his school performance and his social interactions. And we actually were so emotional. We were both crying. And it was like it was a different kid sitting on the chair, honestly.
Yeah.
And I just thought at that moment, I was like, more moms need to know about this, but how to get the message out in a fun and relatable way, you know? Mm-hmm. People are bored of seeing, you know, scientific literature. And I was thinking if I wrote a children's book, it would be a really nice talking point so that the parents are reading it to the children and then they can have a discussion about it afterwards. So both of them are learning and interacting while reading the books. And I thought, you know, if I can make fun, cool, cute characters, then that way everybody would, you know, benefit from the message as well.
So you're sort of writing two layers within these books. You're writing the one layer, which is just a kind of fun, story to engage children. And then you're writing this other layer, which is a sort of, I guess, more towards the parents who are reading it with their child to kind of give them the messaging and say, look out for these signs, do this, that, the other.
Yes, exactly. Because there are a lot of early warning signs that parents don't necessarily know. They don't necessarily know what to look for. And children don't necessarily complain because it's the vision they've always known. So if they've never seen clearly, they don't know what clear vision looks like. And I actually, that was one of the points I tried to drive home in my first book, which is called Misty Mole Gets New Glasses. I wanted to show the journey of having blurry vision and how that impacted every aspect of her life. So she was, you know, a little bit clumsy. She wasn't self-assured. She was shy. And, you know, after getting that first pair of glasses, she becomes her alter ego, Super Mole. So now she can run fast, duck low, and see far. And she realizes that her whole world has changed with just a simple pair of glasses. But I also shed light on the fact that her mom in the book had no clue. You know, there were certain warning signs, but she wasn't sure that it was really a vision impairment that was causing all of these other issues in Misty Mole's life. So I wanted to shed light on that, but I also wanted to let everybody know that early eye screenings are so important because that's really the only way to catch certain vision disorders. Certain vision disorders, they really go undetected, such as amblyopia, where you have one good eye and the other eye is slightly weaker. And then the good eye takes over and the weaker eye continues to weaken until it's too late to correct. So there are certain vision disorders that really have to be caught early on. And the only way to do that is through a vision screening. And unfortunately, vision screenings at the moment, they're recommended, but they're not always mandatory. So it can vary based on the country you're from or the state or the province or the county. And there's no strict nationwide policy about that. So I really wanted people to understand how important it is to get their vision checked and hopefully for policymakers to understand the importance of vision screenings in schools.
Right. That's so interesting. There's such a great way of kind of tackling that and kind of getting the message out without, as you say, kind of just writing textbooks and kind of very scientific blogs and things like that, which aren't always as engaging to not just the children, but the adults as well.
Yeah. It can be very boring and very heavy. And actually, that was one of my challenges writing these books is how do you get these big, heavy topics condensed into fun and short sentences that kids find entertaining and not boring, you know?
Yeah. So had you written many stories before this, or was this your kind of first go at this kind of thing?
Well, I've always had a love for writing, but I just never had the guts to sit down and write a children's book, even though it's something that was on my mind for a really, really long time. And I've always loved reading. Like since I was young, I was always nose in the books and an avid reader for sure. But it was really this idea that came to fruition when I was driving home from work one day and I was listening to this podcast. It was Oprah's Super Soul Sundays, and she was interviewing actually this author called Stephen Pressfield. And he wrote The Legend of Bagger Vance. And he was discussing how long it took for him to finally have a breakthrough novel. And basically the premise of his book, he then wrote another book called The War of Art, where he says that everybody has a creative genius, but it's how do you unlock that? And that our biggest obstacle is this internal force called resistance, which I call procrastination. Which prevents us from daring greatly or doing what our life calling is, you know. And it was really on that day I decided, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to get out of my comfort zone and I'm just going to try it, because you never know unless you try and you have nothing to lose. So I sat down and I started doing a very, very bare skeleton of the books and the characters and the message that I started out only with one book. It was only after I spoke to my publisher that we came out with the idea of having more books. But it was that bare skeleton that came out that day. And it was a labor of love. And I'm really proud of the fact that I was able to overcome that negative self-talk that was telling me, you can't do this. You're just an eye doctor. You don't have any right to write books because that's not your thing. So I recommend for anybody who's an aspiring author to just put pen to paper and just write, keep writing until you unlock that creative genius that he talks about.
I think it's very common amongst writers. That is the amount of pressure we put on ourselves to be like, no, I'm not ready. It's not a good enough story. I haven't thought about it enough. It's like, in the end, you just have to write something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Especially if you have an important message that you want to get out there.
Yeah, exactly. So it sounds like with these books, you're very much the jumping off point is your career, your medical career, and the kind of you wanting to enlighten and kind of share the knowledge of things to look out for within, especially in children, that are easily preventable and stuff like that. When it comes to writing stories, you mentioned you really love writing stories. Do you think you would have written something, even if it wasn't about eyes and the kind of your medical experience?
That's a really good question, Jamie. You're going to get me to go back after this. I'm going to start writing other stories. Actually, I think when you write something, it should be something that you're passionate about. So whatever that is. And because I'm so passionate about eye health, I think that the only thing for now that I'm able to write is about that. But I think in the future that may change, you know, because our lives take different directions and we have many different interests in life. But at the moment, right now, where I'm at in my life, I think that the most important message that I want to get out there is about what I know and what I'm passionate about and what I've researched for the last 20 years. And, you know, it really, it's amazing because all the steps in my life have really led to this, because I first worked in eye care and then I did a master's in public health. And then I was the head of the myopia clinic at Cleveland Clinic, where I'm working a lot with children who have myopia, which is nearsightedness. I then even became more passionate about the topic of myopia, which is why I dedicated a whole book. So that's my second book, by the way, a whole book to myopia, the myopia epidemic, actually, and why screens are bad for our eyes. And of course, everything in moderation, because I'm on my screen too all the time. But yeah, for children, especially, you know, we saw this huge shift during the COVID pandemic where kids were forced to be on screens all day long. And, you know, in concordance with that, we saw a huge spike in myopia cases. So myopia, just to give you a little bit of a, I don't want to bore you with medical stuff, but it's just being nearsighted. So it means you can see near, but you can't see far. And the more you're on screens, the more you're, you know, tucked away in a dark room and not going outside and getting natural light and looking at things far away, the more the myopia will progress.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And so the more myopia progresses, the more the retina gets stretched out, and then you have a much higher risk of developing ocular complications. And people don't really realize that. They're like, oh, it's just a pair of glasses and I'll just change them every 6 months or every year. And then when I'm 18, I'll just get LASIK done and I'll get rid of my glasses. Well, you know, my answer to that is no. If your prescription is too high, you can't get LASIK, first of all. But more importantly, you're compromising your eye health. So rather than to get to that point where it's irreversible, let's look at ways to prevent it. So the main focus of my books is really prevention and awareness.
Oh, that's really interesting. And presumably that kind of damage of sitting next to a screen for long periods of time. That I assume is amplified in children because they are very much developing.
Yes, Jamie, exactly. So the critical development of the eye is happening and these kids are spending hours upon hours on screen. I mean, I have kids that tell me they're on screens 8 to 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
They don't go play outside and parents are really struggling too. It's a constant battle between the parents and their kids. Parents are aware to a certain degree that screens are not good for their children's eyes, but they're having a hard time controlling it because we do live in a digital age and it's not realistic to just tell your kids no more screens, you know, but at the same time, how do we find balance and how do we encourage our kids to play outside and have a more natural and wholesome upbringing the way we did when we were kids? You know, we would like disappear in the forest and, you know, I wouldn't come home until 7 o'clock at night when I was a kid in the summertime. Nowadays, you see kids are just planted in front of their video games, their iPads, their phones, and they can spend, you know, literally the whole day. So many studies have been done to prove that this has an extreme negative impact on vision, but they're calling it an epidemic. Like the WHO actually dubbed it the myopia epidemic because by 2050, more than half the world's population will be nearsighted, which is staggering. And already in certain parts of Southeast Asia, you have more than 80% of the population that have myopia and are developing high myopia as well, which is linked to all these ocular complications. So my whole book, book two, which is called Misty Mole and the Big Switch Off, is about how Misty Mole is surprised to see that all her friends in the woodlands are on screens all the time. And she's asking them if they want to play outside with her. And they're saying, no, they're busy on their screens. And of course, she gets really frustrated because she's the only one without a screen. So she begs her mom and dad if she can, you know, if she can also get a phone. And they finally give in. And I think this is the, you know, the typical story that you hear from parents is that their children beg them for that screen. And they feel like, okay, well, everybody else has one. So my kid should have one too. So she gets the phone or the tablet and she starts playing more and more and more on it and kind of loses control. And then she realizes that her whole life has turned upside down and, you know, nobody's interacting anymore in the forest and they're not going outside to play. And she realizes that she has to make a change. So it's kind of idealistic, but hopefully we can all do that with our kids as well.
And us. I mean, I feel like we as adults are all stuck on screens all day as well.
I know. It's like, how do you tell your kid not to be on their phone or their iPad when you're on it too?
Yeah.
That's the biggest challenge, really.
I wonder if you'll be writing a new series of these Misty Mole ones once, because I know that the Apple Vision Pro recently came out and that's just, it feels like the beginning of all these headsets which are going to start taking over.
It's so scary, Jamie. It's so scary.
Yeah.
Honestly. How bad could it be?
Yeah, that's got to have a similar effect, right? That's got to affect our eyes in some way.
But not just our eyes. I mean, look at social interaction. Look at mental health.
Yeah.
You know, mental health issues are on the rise because kids are isolated. They're not interacting anymore. They're not getting vitamin D. They're not going outside to play. And it's affecting every aspect of their life. You know, there's obesity is on the rise and all these other chronic diseases. And it's all interrelated, by the way. So I also wanted to talk to the health, the underlying health issue that eyes are related to every part of the body, right? Like it's basically, I just want to say that it's really a holistic approach to health. So when we take care of our bodies, we're also taking care of our eyes. And that's why I wrote book three, which is about nutrition in the eye. Because we always hear about nutrition, right? But we don't realize that it has a huge impact on eye health as well.
I'm constantly told a very similar thing by the dentist. The dentist always saying everything is connected to your teeth and like maintaining healthy teeth also affects like the rest of your body and stuff like that.
That's brilliant. That's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's good to think about these things as like, yeah, your eye health, your gum health, like does have knock-on effects to the rest of your body and then your well-being and then like your mental health and, you know, this, that, the other.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, if you can't see well, imagine how that impacts every aspect of your life, from your mm-hmm. social interactions to your educational attainment to your productivity, et cetera. So it's really something that has such a ripple effect if people only knew, right? So
yeah. Let's get back onto the publishing side of things. Do you have a literary agent?
So Jamie, I was very lucky with my publishing journey. I was actually friends with my publisher.
That's the dream, I think.
Yeah, so I got to skip all of those steps that, you know, unfortunately sometimes people have to go through hoops and hurdles to get their books published. I know it can be a very daunting process. But I was really lucky because I was actually sitting and having a coffee with my publisher at the Dubai Lit Fest in 2020, right before the COVID epidemic. And I was telling her about my book idea and she loved it. And especially because she also has a background in health. She's a medical doctor. So she loved the idea. And in fact, she even pushed me to write more than one book. Even before I was done with the first one, she said it would be really good if you could do it as a series. Because it, you know, when you write children's books, people are often waiting for the second and the third book. So it would be good to just have it ready and launch it sequentially. But she was super supportive, gave me such great advice. And I can tell you it was really so much easier knowing that the publisher was on your team, you know, and working to make sure that your book is a success and helping you every step of the way. But really the biggest godsend as well was having an illustrator such as Ishi Walters. Because when you write a children's book, the illustrator is everything, right? She's the one who brought life to the book. She's the one who made it alive and vivid. And she brought the characters, their personalities and their, you know, their fun, relatable side. So it was such an amazing experience working with her as well, because when she was illustrating, she also had a lot of feedback for me on how to.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like I had already written the text, but you know, when you're writing for children, it has to be very concise and very efficiently written. You don't want to write too much. And she would help me with making the text tighter and where we should put the text in relation to the illustrations and certain text we cut out and we added text. So she actually helped me with the editing process, which is also not very traditional, right? When it comes to writing books, you usually have the writing process and then the editing process and the illustrating. But the illustrator, in my case, helped me with the editing as well. So that was amazing.
Oh, so it was very collaborative between you and Ishi?
Yeah, she's brilliant. She's really talented. I'm really fortunate that I got a chance to work with her, honestly.
Yeah, the illustrations are lovely. But that's, yeah, you're right, that is quite unique, because often the thing that I've heard with illustrations and stuff like that is that usually the writer does their bit, the publisher then finds the illustrator, and then you won't get too much interaction, but you'll get a few kind of images sent back for your kind of opinion on them, and then that'll go back and forth. But it's cool that you were kind of working more directly with your illustrator.
Oh my God. Yeah. She was so collaborative. She was so helpful and her feedback was invaluable. And almost everything she suggested, I changed. And there was a flow, you know, we had a good flow going and a good rapport. And I think that I really owe her so much when it comes to these books. So.
Oh, amazing. Well, that brings us to what is often the hardest question of every episode. And that is, Yasmin, if you were stranded on a desert island with a single book, which book would you hope that it would be?
My teenage daughter's diary. No, I'm joking.
God forbid.
No, I'm joking. I that was a question that that I contemplated quite a bit, because I'm an avid reader, so I have a lot of favorite books. But I have to say, this is probably very cliche, you've heard it a lot, I love The Alchemist.
By Paulo. I don't think anyone said it before.
Really?
It's come up often as people sometimes come on and say, you know, if I had a second choice or a third choice, uh-huh. I think it comes up. But yeah, I don't think anyone's picked it as the number one.
Well, I think it really spoke to me on so many levels, because it really helped me overcome my fear and listen to my intuition, which is something I've been working on for so long, and pursuing what he calls in the book the personal legend, or I would say the personal calling. Mm-hmm. And that really was very deep for me, because I think we all have it within us, but it's just about finding it and pursuing it. And a lot of us are fearful of the next step. So it helped me a lot on my writing journey as well. So that's why I chose it. And it's a book that I would read over and over if I was on an island.
Yes, it's many layers to it. I remember reading it a few years ago. And it was one of those books where every now and again, I set myself a challenge of being like, right, I need to stop reading the fun, new, modern stuff that I want to read. And I need to go back and read a classic, or like something that's just iconic. So that was the book. And one of those books where I finished it and just thought, wow, that was so much more impactful than I expected it to be.
Yes, yes. It really had a long lasting impact on me. And I think that's what a good book does. Is it makes you, you know, you keep thinking about it even after you've read it. So that was my choice. I hope you like it.
It's a great choice. And now I think about it, it's wild that you, I think you might be the first person to choose The Alchemist.
Wow, Jamie. I thought you were going to tell me, oh, nah, been there, done that. I've heard that a million times. So I'm glad that I'm the first one.
If you picked Jane Austen, then maybe I would have said that. But no.
Yeah, I was on the fence.
I knew it.
But I figured, come on, that's been done. So,
But we love Jane Austen. Just
You know, she's amazing.
No hate, no way. Love Jane Austen. Awesome. And that brings us to the end of the regular episode and into the extended cut section exclusive to Patreon subscribers. So anyone listening who hasn't yet joined the Patreon, please do think about it. It goes a long way towards covering the cost of running this podcast. Listen, this has been amazing. It's been so fun chatting with you. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's been amazing. Thank you, Jamie.
For anyone who wants to keep up with what Yasmin is doing, you can follow her on Instagram at dr.yasminlruby. You can head over to her website, www.yasminlruby.com. And Misty Mole is out now, available in the UK, but soon it will be worldwide. So you can go get that. Is it all three books are out now?
So in the UK, yes. And then once it's released worldwide, I think they're going to start with the first book and then they're going to move on to the second and the third book.
Okay. Amazing. So there you go. Go get Misty Mole and learn all about vision and cute animals. To support this podcast, like, follow and subscribe on your platform of choice, and follow along on all socials. Join the Patreon for ad-free extended episodes, and do check out my other podcast, The Chosen Ones and Other Tropes. Thanks again, Yasmin, and thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you on the next episode.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.